I think they like you, Steve.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
It's the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Good morning, 720 WGN, Steve Cochran Show, Justin Kaufman here. Steve's going to be here in just a sec. Dave Ennett, Mary Sandberg, of course, Mary Vandeveld, Pete and Joe are here. It's another Monday morning here on the Cochran Show with you till 10 o'clock. Huge show today. Wow, so much to do. It's amazing to look at the lineup of not just the big news stories that we'll be covering, whether it be the Kavanaugh allegations or locally Laquan McDonald, but also national stories, sports stories. Tiger Woods. Huh? How about that? I know that makes everyone excited in here. I know Steve's going to go over the moon with the Tiger Woods victory.
Well, we've been talking about it for so long. Would he ever win again? And I think Steve and I have both said, Mary, is that he was going to. I mean, he showed enough signs, but when you keep coming close and it doesn't happen, yeah. You start to wonder, the clock's ticking, he's going to be 43, and is he ever going to get the opportunity to win again? And now he's the favorite for the Masters next year.
It's pretty amazing to me to still see the fanfare for that golfer. I mean, it's just tremendous.
Because he is the equivalent, I'm trying to think of, what's a big event that everybody tunes into? When Tiger Woods is in contention, everybody's watching.
Yeah.
And yesterday, unfortunately, they're up against the NFL and some great games, and people are watching, focused on the Bears, and the baseball pennant races are down to the wire, and so you have to divert your attention, and yet if there's anything that can pull people away from those things in golf, it's Tiger Woods.
Tiger Woods.
I like that they said at the beginning of the broadcast, we're going to run a lot of commercials early so that we don't interrupt you later when they assumed he'd be, you know, tying this thing up. Yeah. So it was nice.
Well, we'll have plenty of coverage. Some people from the Golf Channel coming on this morning. Rex Hoggard's going to join us in just a couple minutes. Also, Rich Lerner. We got a lot to do today. So why don't we get to it with the Top 66?
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Get your kicks. With the Top 666, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
Number one, Christine Blasey Ford agrees to testify. President Trump's view in a radio interview to be broadcast this morning. The president said Judge Kavanaugh was a fantastic, fantastic man, and questioned why Dr. Blasey Ford hadn't reported her accusations to the authorities. This on the heels, and will probably, as it's a recorded interview, not include the latest allegation. Another woman has come forward from when Judge Kavanaugh was at Yale. There's questions about, the validity of that. And then there's a third allegation that lawyer Michael Avenatti, the famed lawyer of Stormy Daniels, says that he has. And he's going to talk about it today on CNN. So there you go. They start to mount here, and we will see if it has any repercussions. As Republicans are pretty steadfast that they want a confirmation vote as soon as possible. So the question will be, will any of this information stop them from getting what they want?
When she talks on Thursday, can they make their decision Thursday afternoon?
I think so. I think they can do, all right, real quick, come back for 10 minutes.
Let's confirm.
Yeah, let's confirm. Confirm or not confirm. Can we do this? Great, everybody. Off to the Hamptons before it's too fall. That's what's going to happen. Yeah. So, number two, the hashtag why I didn't report. Survivors of sexual assault are using that hashtag to answer the question, why didn't you say something sooner? This is an issue that we hear all the time when it comes to.
But I think that's from the president saying, why didn't she report this early? If it was that big of an incident, she would have reported it to the authorities back then.
And you're seeing more and more celebrities come out. I saw Alyssa Milano this morning and others penning op-eds, essentially talking about their own instances with sexual assault and why they didn't report.
Nancy Reagan's daughter, she wrote one in the New York Times this weekend.
I mean, it's really hard for, I mean, obviously nothing surprises me anymore from the president, but to be able to give fuel to a movement that he just seems to disdain. I mean, it's one that has coalesced into protests on the streets in millions and millions of numbers. So it is a political opponent. I mean, it's so strange to say, but a gender is his political opponent.
Yeah.
I saw a statistic that 20-30% of sexual assaults are reported. So that leaves, what, 70 or 80% that are not. And only 1% of that 20-30% are ever brought to convictions or brought to cases.
I mean, think about what we're seeing right now. This woman does come forward, and it's obviously such a political story and one that's at the height, and not everyone who's had sexual assault in their lifetime is having to, you know, deal with Supreme Court hearings in front of Congress. But same concept here. Just think smaller, but there always is a lot put on the victim, and a lot that they have to, for whatever reason, they have to account for,
yeah,
even though they were victims in this case. So you can understand why that is.
Yeah, it is the incredible the response, though, to... You say, why didn't she report it? Well, hashtag. The whole world is answering, the female world. And men. There's men who have abused that are on that, too.
Today, or this week, Bill Cosby's sentencing. A two-day hearing begins today for the disgraced entertainer who was convicted in April of sexual assault. Will he be jailed? He's 81 years old. He faces up to 30 years in prison. He said that in the sentence hearing, they're going to really push the idea that he is not an aggressive sexual predator.
Why does something like this take 2 days to do? I mean, haven't we been through the whole trial and everything,
yeah,
and now we have to rehash all this for 2 days again?
I guess it's all character witnesses to try and see how much leniency the judge is going to have.
And are they coming out again, all these character witnesses?
I don't know.
Some of them will be able to make victim impact statements. That's part of it. The legal system doesn't move quickly at all.
Yeah.
On a good day. But these sentencing hearings can be, you know, they have to weigh whether or not there are circumstances that might cause him to get more time or less time. So there's a lot that goes on. That's why it's probably, right. And, you know, there are all kinds of sidebars and things. It just takes a while.
Well, I had seen that they're going to say that he's legally blind and his health, like jail, isn't a great spot for him, but I don't really, my sympathies aren't really.
Yeah, all the more to rush it through, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so that in itself would mean that there may be a doctor that has to come and testify, mm-hmm, or there may have to be other medical testimony. So, I mean, that's why, you know, that's why it's going to take a couple days.
Yeah. Next. We talked about Tiger Woods. Next.
My favorite thing.
Really?
Well, we did it. We did Tiger Woods.
My favorite thing about
the paper crumpled.
We've got to move it on.
4 hours, yeah.
Tiger Woods is that Big Boy was at the
tournament.
Was
he there?
Yeah.
My man?
And he tweeted, hang on 1 second here.
Oh, it was in Atlanta. That's right.
Yeah, yeah. He tweeted a picture with him, and he said, he was doing commentary videos, which you can watch on his Instagram or Twitter, but he said, congrats, champ. For shizzle.
Big Boy was a guest on The Download. I don't want to make a big deal about it, but he was half of the Outkast crew hanging out with Justin. Not a big deal. Not a big deal. It was a big deal for me. The Bears with a big victory yesterday. I have to say, you know, to listen to our own radio station as well, not a perfect game by any stretch. At the end of the day, we got away with a win. But, you know, as much as everyone called out as the Arizona Cardinals are one of the worst teams in the league, so are the Buffalo Bills, so are the Detroit Lions, mm-hmm, so are the Washington Redskins, and all three of those teams upset heavily favored teams. Even the Tennessee Titans beat the Jacksonville Jaguars. So my point being that there is a lot there are a lot of teams that made their third week the week to show up. And the Bears, you know, had a game they'd like to forget, I believe, on the offensive side of the ball. But the
that's an ugly game.
The defensive side of the ball was amazing. That was an amazing
game. But it's an ugly football game. Dave, Kaz said yesterday in the post game, mm-hmm, the NFL sucks. The NFL is terrible. The parity is here. 8-8 ought to win every division. I don't disagree with that. They've made it too flat. They've made it too even.
I mean, you see
that's
teams.
Kind of a knee-jerk, though. We're only in week three.
No, I mean, there's.
Tell it to Kaz. He's bigger than both of us.
Yeah, well, Kaz is wrong.
Well,
no, he's not wrong. No, he's not wrong.
I don't think it's the league.
NFL as a product is not what it once was. I like domination. I like when a team can go 12-4 or 13-3.
I don't think it's that the league is bad, though, Steve. I just think that this
Kaz is in the green room right now.
I was with Kaz yesterday in the green room, and he only punched me twice.
Oh, well, that's
but. It's. I think the league, the quality of football is. I don't think it's terrible. It's just balanced. I mean, I just think it's
outside of Patrick Mahomes. What did you see yesterday in the NFL that you went, wow, that's fantastic?
What did I see? Well,
outside
I just
of Patrick Mahomes.
Aside the
New Orleans Saints overtime win over the Atlanta Falcons, two playoff teams battling.
I was too busy watching golf.
That's all today for the Top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
And the Tour Championship just outside of Atlanta after an eagle on 18. Tiger Woods pulls into a tie for the lead after one round with Ricky Fowler. They each shoot 5-under 65s. On the home of the Blackhawks, Northwestern Wildcats, and White Sox.
Tiger
baseball.
In a route. Write it down.
I know, you wrote, am I right? Yeah, I didn't write it down last time.
Write it down.
Tiger. In a route.
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay, got it. I'm Andy Mazur, WGN Sports.
Obviously, you're not a golfer.
That was a Friday show.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
You also.
On 720 WGN.
Hold that thought. Oh, I thought maybe you had more. Yeah, I got it. Okay.
I was saying that you also correctly or were 1 point off on the Bears as well. You said it was going to be a close game.
Hey, I said it was going to be a 14-14 tie.
You did,
closest.
But I'm just saying. What did
you say about the Tiger thing?
Oh, I thought he was going to win.
Just saying, Steve, you've got it.
You didn't go out on a limb. The danger of that prediction on Friday.
Yeah, I did not jump in. And
Cochran, by the way, it wasn't a route in the end. It was two shots. But at one point, he's up by five.
Rex Hoggard,
our friend, live in Paris already for the Ryder Cup this week. We'll have more on that later in the week. Good morning, Rex.
Good morning, and very good calling Tiger Woods to win that, but I have to ask, how many times did you pick Tiger Woods to win in a route before this season? My guess is he's thrown that out there a couple times. Eventually, you're going to land it.
I was doing it at the Bob Hope Desert Classic, and they don't even call it that anymore. No, look, this is one of the great sports stories. I don't care what you think of Tiger Woods. He's great for the game. If you're nuts for golf like I am, he's great for golf, period. The ratings were up, I don't know, 80% over the weekend. So it's all good. But just, we love a comeback story. What was he, at 1,100th in the world a year ago?
I mean, after he finished in December at the Hero World Challenge, which was essentially his first event back, he had moved to just outside the top 600 in the world. That's kind of the number I base it on, because it gives you an idea of how far he's come. And he's done it in a relatively short amount of time. I mean, it's amazing to think that it was about a year ago right now that he was talking to us at the President's Cup and honestly saying that he had no idea what his competitive future would be like. And he was able to piece together a game. He was able to put himself into contention a couple of times this year and to close it out. And what was essentially the walk-off, the ninth inning. I mean, it's a very impressive finish.
The Ryder Cup coming up later this week. He'll be the center of attention there, and rightfully so. But Phil Mickelson, dead last this weekend. What shape of his game is he in?
Well, clearly he didn't play well. I don't think he played well throughout the entire playoffs. And it will be a concern going into the Ryder Cup, but he was asked about it yesterday, and I think he brought up a pretty good point, that this is so different than anything else these guys do, that once you get in this environment, once you get inside that team room, once you start feeling the adrenaline, this is usually when Phil plays his best golf, to be quite honest with you. So even though he didn't come in with the best form, and you can probably say that about the European players as well, I think everybody just kind of elevates their game to this point. And more than likely, this will be Phil's last Ryder Cup as a player. Certainly, he's going to be a captain, a vice captain of future Ryder Cups. But this one means a lot to him. So I fully expect him to be ready to play and to come out in a little bit better form than what we saw last week in Atlanta.
Rex, Tiger is already the favorite for the Masters last year. I saw that note.
I'm predicting a route.
You're calling it a route already, Steve? I mean, I guess the question is, is it realistic to take this performance and the performance he's had throughout the year, and especially the second half of the year, and project towards next year and say that at age 43, he will be that guy?
the number so much. It is realistic when you take not just last week. I mean, obviously it was a very impressive victory, but he was asked even before he finished out on Sunday, you know, would this be considered a successful year? And it would have been, even though Tiger always kind of judges himself on victories. Again, you look how far he had come, and if you look at his body of work, including that victory at East Lake, yeah, I think it's absolutely fair, because you have to factor in that nobody knows that place better than he does, and no one has performed there better than he has outside of maybe Jack Nicklaus. So, yeah, absolutely. I think that's a pretty good bet right now.
A couple of times on Saturday and Sunday, his right foot was slipping when he would hit a golf ball, and I didn't see anyone ask him about that in the any of the press conferences. Did you see anyone ask anything about that?
No, there was a lot more else going on. I think it's a good point. I think everyone saw it on a couple of really key drives, and he drove the ball well. I mean, when you consider he started the week, he was struggling with his driver a little bit, and that was going to be the last piece of the puzzle, because if he can put it in the fairway, his iron play is so good. And on the weekend, he just found his rhythm on the greens. It seems like everything was a tap-in for him. But yeah, it was a little weird, because you normally don't see that.
Yeah, you know, Rex, that's called a Cochran. Happy feet when you're hitting the big dog. So, how are things in Paris? Have there been any rude people coming up to you yet saying, hey, you stole my title list?
No, I just landed where I'm on my way to the golf course right now, so I'm excited to see it. I was on the plane with a couple of caddies for the European team, and it's just a different excitement. It's amazing how fast we transitioned as well. I mean, the tournament wasn't even over, and I saw Bryson DeChambeau, who would be making his first start at the Ryder Cup. He had gone in the locker room and changed into a Ryder Cup T-shirt and USA cool. hat. He comes walking out, and he looks at me, and he gets a big smile on his face, and he goes, I cannot wait. Like, this is what they've been playing for so long and what they've been looking forward to. And you try to put it out of your mind, because you try to focus on the week. You try to focus on what you're doing for a particular shot or a particular round. But now everybody sort of lets themselves, you know, think forward and what this is going to be like. And when you see the stadiums that they have set up here, when you see how many fans they're expecting and how closely these two teams seem to be matched up, it's going to be an epic week.
NBC Sports and the Golf Channel all week long. Thanks, Rex.
Appreciate it, guys.
Rex Hoggard live from Paris. And again, we'll check in with him and Kurt Byram. And who else this week?
Rich Lerner later today at 7:53.
Okay. And Dave, your homework here at work.
Yes.
I can't think of another sports equivalent of the best, arguably the best to ever play the game,
mm-hmm.
to come back from being almost out of the game to be at the top of the game.
I can't even.
You have 10 seconds.
I can't even.
Sidney Crosby. I feel like we thought he wasn't going to play.
Really?
When the concussion?
What about Brett
Favre? It's hard,
though,
because I really dislike him.
Brett Favre left and came back at the Vikings.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, I agree. It's unbelievable to think about the career he's already had, Tiger Woods. And for him to be able to come back, it's amazing.
Crosby may be fair. Hockey doesn't get the same sort of pub.
Right. And
but I really, that I mention, think, I really dislike him.
I know. But he almost didn't play for 2 years, I think, like with the concussion. So
Michael Jordan came back, but
This would be like if Michael goes to the Wizards, and then 2 years after he leaves the Wizards, gets ripped, comes back, and wins another title.
Well, remember, he retired and came back and led the Bulls to 3 more championships.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah,
that's
but
true.
That wasn't an injury thing. That was, I'm going to go play baseball.
Okay, you didn't qualify.
Yeah. Now, if we can go back in time and give Michael 4 back surgeries, I'd like to see how that works out. By the way, because he's Michael, I still say he wins 3 more.
Okay.
Right. Back to the headlines next on 720 WGN.
Doctor.
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 And doctor. Well, we miss anyone?
Is Northwestern Medicine BP. Call Dr. Morse right now.
Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, the pursuit of better health care starts here. Dr. Kevin Most joins us in another beautiful morning in Chicago. Doc, as the sun rises over Lake Michigan, over my left shoulder, unless I move this way, then it's over my right shoulder. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Yeah, you guys, I have to get up there and see your view, because Dave, you know, Justin rave about it every morning.
Why don't you come by? You're always downtown.
We got the flu shot. Flu shot season is happening.
So. Yes, flu shots very soon here.
Yeah, but usually don't do that till November. Why don't you next time?
No. We'll do it in October.
Next time you're called downtown for one of your meetings that you love to attend, come by.
Yeah, definitely.
And we will, and we'll have to make sure that you come back to give Andrea one in the evening, because we know how much Andrea likes to get shots.
It's a great point. And then
don't
swing
tell her because she'll go to Scotland or something.
And then swing by Pearl Mortgage and do the same for Ross.
Yeah.
We're going to talk migraines in just a second, but you are as nuts about golf as I am, maybe more. Any thoughts on Tiger you'd like to say talk about?
You know, believe me, I was one that said he's done. When he had that surgery, I said, this guy is done. There's no way he can come back. But what an unbelievable week he's had. It's amazing, right? Ryder Cup this week. You look at Tiger, who finished first as the captain's choice. Did you see who finished dead last?
Yeah, Phil.
Yeah. So the two captain's choices. But amazing. I'm just really, really super surprised that he rallied as much as he did. It'll be interesting to see how he plays going forward.
Anything in life that you climb to the top of the mountain that you're the best in your particular field takes incredible amounts of work, patience, practice, repetition, rinse and repeat. Fold in rehab from four back surgeries. I mean, that's kind of hard to comprehend, isn't it, Doctor?
Yeah, unbelievable. Really, it is. It's amazing to get back to the level is and to hit it still as far as he does. He's still putting a lot of stress on that back. Not sure it's great, but, you know, that's how some guys are just driven to do that.
It's very entertaining. All right, let's talk migraines. Why are migraines becoming, or am I wrong about this, more prevalent than ever?
Well, you know, it's not so much the prevalence. I think what it is right now is the awareness of what a migraine is. And I think more people are now going to the doctor because the light at the end of the tunnel is not a medication that is going to make them feel almost worse than the migraine.
Hmm. So we're not having more migraines. We're talking more about migraines.
Yeah. And, you know, people use the word migraine. It's unfortunate. We throw the word migraine around quite a bit. I have a migraine, you know. And to the people who have migraines, they kind of look at you and say, you don't have a migraine, you know.
Or if you're hosting a bunch of 14-year-olds at a house for a sleepover, you might say, you guys are giving me a migraine.
Exactly. People say that all the time.
So that's the use of it in a sentence as opposed to an actual diagnosis.
Yeah. You know, there's 10 to 15 different types of headaches. You know, there's tension headaches and cluster headaches and sinus headaches and caffeine-based headaches, ice cream headaches. So, I mean, there's a lot of headaches. But classic migraines are the ones that are actually debilitating to people. And when I say debilitating, when you look at how much it costs this country and lost productivity from a business side of it and then from a quality of life where people... These headaches can go on for 3 or 4 days where people can't leave a dark room. They just lay there because their headache is so bad.
Everybody I've ever known that has migraines talks about the aura. This, you know, for those of us who don't have migraines, luckily, we can't really identify with it. Is that something that all people with migraines have, and is that indicative of them?
Not all, but the ones that do, it's one of those good news, bad news. The good news is you know it's coming, so the headache just doesn't start. You have this aura. Some people it's a smell. Some people they see spots. They have this visual. And they know my migraine is coming, which allows them a couple things. One, if they're at work, may give them enough time to get home or get them to a place where it's going to be cool and quiet and dark so that the migraine may not be as bad. So it's that preemptive, I know it's coming because of the aura. That being said, it also is, oh my gosh, I have a migraine coming. So it's, you know, the good and the bad. You can take some action, but it's only about 25% of people that actually have an aura.
More on this in a moment. Justin wants to ask you questions, including about whether or not he needs to come in for a checkup.
Yeah.
But in just a second, we'll get back with that. Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, the pursuit of better health care starts here. It's Dr. Kevin Most and Doc Justin's here. Justin, turn your head and cough and ask Doc a question.
Doc, the triggers, a lot has gone into the science of migraines and headaches, and we know headaches to be sometimes a symptom of something else. With the way that modern science is working, are we getting any closer to understanding why migraines happen?
Yeah. Yeah, and it is interesting. You talk about triggers, and people have different triggers, right? Some people will be triggered by bright lights. Other people will be triggered by food. Other people will be triggered by something as simple as a smell. So we know that the triggers change from person to person. Now, avoidance of triggers sometimes is easy, sometimes it's not. But trying to get to the science of it is what happens once that individual sees or hears or what happens with that trigger and what is happening in the brain. And that's probably one of the more fascinating things that's happened just recently. A drug was approved in May by the FDA, and three more were just approved just a couple of weeks ago. And one of the reasons we're talking about it, because a lot of people don't even realize that there's something out there that now can help them.
So I remember a few years back, I have some girlfriends that get migraines, and when the news came out that you could get Botox to help with your migraines, and it was very exciting because we just got the green light on Botox is what we thought, you know. But I don't think it's in the same cosmetic sense for the migraine, right? They don't put it in your brow or by your crow's feet to make your headache go away, do they?
Correct.
Where do they put it? They jam it on the top of your head? What are they doing?
And it's totally different as far as why it works. You know, we talked about Botox. Botox is a chemical, actually a toxin from a bacteria that causes muscles to relax and stay relaxed. That's why you get rid of the wrinkles. But actually, for patients with Botox or with migraines, it stops the activation of the pain network. So it stops the pain from going. It really doesn't have anything to do with the muscles. So it's kind of a unique thing with Botox. And, you know, people that get relief with Botox, it's great. It doesn't work with a huge population for migraines, but it's certainly something that people can try because it's one shot every couple months versus, you know, suffering through them.
Why do women get them more often than men?
That's a great question. You know, we wonder whether it's a hormonal balance issue, but women are three times more likely. Now, some will discount that and say, well, men don't go to the doctor for a headache.
They lay on the couch and whine at home.
Complain, exactly. So really, we don't know why there's more, but it is three times higher in women.
Doc, the treatments, is it just really about the pain receptors, about limiting the pain of a migraine, or are we at the point where we're starting to find treatments that will get to the root of why you're having a migraine?
Yeah, actually, it's B instead of A. So it used to be A, right? We only, you know, we had to have medications that would treat it. Our goal now is to prevent that from happening, to stop the migraines completely. And probably one of the more fascinating things that's going on right now, we have a chemical in our brain called CGRP. And that chemical, when it's released, causes inflammation of the nerves in the brain and causes migraines. We know that because we can give you an infusion of this protein, and you will end up with a migraine. So the goal is, how can we stop that? So right now, these are the four newest drugs that are out, are these CGRP inhibitors. And the reason we're talking today is people may not know that they're out there. They may have suffered from migraines for a long time, and they don't know that this drug is out there, because a lot of the medications that we would use to prevent, the side effects are so terrible that people said, forget it, I'd rather run the risk that I'm going to have a migraine and deal with it, you know, 3, 4, 5 times a year.
There's other things too, right? There's these nerve stimulators. Yeah. Suppose you could take a hammer, smash your toe, then your toe would hurt more than your head.
Right.
And people on blood pressure meds who exercise are less likely?
Well, the thing there is, if you're going to keep your blood pressure down, so people, the biggest thing is, people that know they have migraines and they chronically have migraines, they know it. We're more concerned about that individual who didn't know they had had migraines or now have exercised and are getting a headache. Those are kind of red flags for us, and we need to make sure that those are checked. There's a few other red flags. Worst headache of your life. Never had a headache, and you have the worst headache of your life, something we call a thunderclap headache. Those are very concerning. Go straight to the emergency room for those. Women who are pregnant and have very bad headaches, definitely get into your obstetrician, because there are other issues during pregnancy with headaches that can be very damaging.
Lots of notes here, as always, from the great Dr. Kevin Most. Those will be posted with the podcast in just a matter of minutes. WGNradio.com is a good place to start with that. But wherever you get your podcast, you can link up with that and get Doc's notes and also his Social Security number if you're stealing his ID.
Yes.
Doc, have a great Monday.
You guys, see, we'll talk to you guys soon.
Coming up, stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio.
Work it, make it, do it, makes us harder, better, faster, stronger.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
There's a new Brett Kavanaugh accuser this morning, Ronan Farrow, who's taken down a lot of big names in the last year, has co-written a new story. We'll get into that with Ryan Nobles from CNN after the bottom of the hour. Most valuable person on the planet coming up. And look who's in studio right now. It's our pal, Dr. Ian Smith. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How you doing?
Nice to see you again.
Good to see you in your beautiful studios. Wow, what a view.
Not bad, right?
Not bad.
Not bad.
Moving on up like George Jefferson used to say.
That's right. Yeah, we have Mr. Bentley down the hall. while he's coming in. I'm going to walk on his back. You have a new book called The Ancient Nine, and this is not your typical book.
No, not at all. It's actually it's a mystery. It's a thriller. I've been writing it for 25-plus years.
Wow.
Because this is something that has stayed with you from the time 25 years ago when you originally conceptualized it?
Well, I was in college, and I was a member of one of Harvard's secret societies, which this is based on, the Final Clubs. And I knew as a senior that I had to write this book because the experience of being in one of these secret societies is so outrageous, in a good way. So different from who I was and what I was and how I grew up, you know what I mean? The way it starts is the book opens up with 1927. Two kids are trying to break into what's called the Delphic Mansion, which is my club. And one disappears. Then it fast forwards to the 80s when Spencer Collins from the South Side of Chicago, which is me, is being punched. They call it punched, so you're being invited to join the process of joining the club. And so this kid from nowhere is being punched by this club. He has no idea what it is, by the way, or the history of it. I mean, you're talking Rockefellers, Vanderbilts, the Kennedys, all the Roosevelts were members of these clubs. So this kid kind of is just kind of ambling along, going through the process of getting in, and then discovers that this other kid had disappeared in 1927 trying to break in.
So he's got to find out why.
And the Ancient Nine ends up being a secret society within the secret society.
So when the movie The Skulls came out with Joshua Jackson and Paul Walker, were you like, hey, this is the book I'm writing?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned
that. Topic.
Yeah, well, Mary, here's the deal. So I've never seen that movie because I was already writing this book.
Yeah, and you didn't
and
want
I didn't
to want
influence me.
Sure.
But speaking of movies, last week, someone optioned it from Hollywood.
Oh. Nice!
So a week out, it got optioned, knock on wood. Now you know how Hollywood is. You never know what's going to happen, but they said this is cinematic. We want to do this.
Oh, of course it is.
And here's the crazy thing:
The Skulls 2, the sequel, will finally come out.
That's right. That's right. But the crazy thing is like Matt Damon, the actor, is behind
Wait, Matt
me.
Damon can't play you.
No, he's in the club.
Oh, I'm kidding.
He would try to play me. No, but this is my experience was Matt Damon's experience. Matt Damon comes from Somerville, which is a town right next to Cambridge.
Okay.
Tough, gritty town.
Yeah.
And he was the class behind me, so we brought Matt into the club.
Is it called Punched at Harvard?
Yes. So it's called You're a Punchy and You Get Punched. So about 100 guys in the beginning of the punch season, 100 guys for each club throughout the campus, they get punched. And then after every event, they whittle that list down by about 20, 25 until you get to the final number, which is about 12 to 20 kids.
Is this a frat on steroids? Is this because you got to pledge a frat, pledge punch, same thing? No.
Yeah, very
spoken by a college dropout over here.
Well, frats. So Harvard doesn't have frats. They used to have frats and disbanded because of the nature of frats, and that's why all these rich guys started the Final Clubs.
Okay.
They start in 1700s. The founder of my club, J.P. Morgan Jr. I mean, you go into the club, you can see his whole setup. So.
But you don't know what you're getting into when you're first recruited.
Well, you don't. I mean, the way I got invited was that in the middle of the night, someone slipped an envelope under my door, literally in the middle of the night. There was no postage, no return address. It just said my name with my house number. And I opened it up, and it said the president and members of the Delphic Club invite you to a cocktail party at this address. And I was like, first of all, I didn't know what a cocktail party was. I was a kid from nowhere, right? So I was like, this must be some dweeby kind of Harvard organization, as they often do, trying to pretend like they're adults. So I just put it to the side. 2 days later, I'm in basketball practice. After practice, the older guys in the locker room are saying, it's punch season. So I'm listening, and they're like, yeah, you know, guys are going to start inviting people to stuff. And they mentioned this Delphic Club because the name was so memorable. So I ran back, rode my bicycle back to the house, my house, looked at the invitation, and it was to one of these clubs. And I was like, this is crazy. So I tried it because I don't know why someone would punch me because I don't have what they have.
This doesn't give away the book. What was your experience in the club?
It was great. I mean, it was, you know.
By the way, did you notice how quiet Dave's being during this? There's got to be some sort of secret Northwestern club that he's not telling us about.
Oh, I'm sure there is, but I was never invited.
That's what anybody would say who's
in that
club.
That's right.
Is that it, Doc?
Yeah, that's how it works. Yeah.
Okay. Gave myself away.
Yeah, you did. But it was fun. I mean, listen, this is the first time, and I say in the book, because the book says based on real events. This stuff is true. It's the first time I've seen kids be adults. Like, we'd be at this cocktail party, they'd be smoking cigars, and one kid, I'll never forget this conversation, one kid said, yeah, let's go to the Bahamas this weekend, I'm using my dad's plane, he's not using it. And this is the 80s, okay? So I'm like, They're private. I didn't know private planes existed, yeah, yeah. Right? But you know, it's that milieu of people. And once again, to this day, I don't know why they punched me. I have no idea.
Dr. Smith, you made your name and quite famous off of fitness regimens, diet books, Shred, Super Shred. Both are huge books. As a writer, you're always writing about how to motivate people. You're almost writing about them more than you. Mm-hmm. How's the difference of flipping it around and writing about your experience?
That's a great question. So for me, I've always loved fiction, and I'm a big writer of fiction. In fact, this is my second novel, not my first. People think it's my first, but my first one was called The Blackbird Papers back in 2004. But, you know, I'm a crime fiction guy. I'm writing actually a Chicago-based PI series that I hope to come out next year. But writing this was very autobiographical because I had really struggled. Am I going to write a nonfiction quasi-expose on these clubs, which would be very interesting, or am I going to kind of fictionalize it? Because I didn't really want to do a hit piece on my brothers, because I didn't have a bad experience, but people could perceive it that way. So how could I tell some of these secrets? Because I really wanted people to see behind the scenes of these clubs, which have no one's ever written extensively about these clubs. So I wanted people to see it. So it was interesting doing it, and my friends are calling me now. My best friend before I got here, who's down in Winston-Salem, called me because he's like listened to the audiobook of it, and he was like, "Man, was that Robin Minter or was it Eden Williams?" In the you know, I was like, "It's Robin. Good catch." So it really is. It's fun. It's a lot of fun.
So you're not going to be taken, thrown in a river. Tom Hanks will have to figure out what happened to you, and he's got a bad haircut when he does. None of that's going to. Dan Brown's on your case. None of this happening.
Well, let me tell you something. The Irish butler actually was thrown in the Charles River in the book. And my friend, who I just mentioned, remembers our butler just like disappeared. So, you know, I think I'm pretty good. I do say it's a novel, so, you know, but a lot of real stuff is in there. And let me just say this. Two of Harvard's most important books. One book was in the private library of King James I, which was donated to Harvard. The other book was the last book remaining of John Harvard's collection. The rest of them burned in a fire in the 1700s. And the only reason why this last book survived was because a student had taken it out of the library and forgot to return it. So those two books...
How about that?
Great, right? Still in existence. They're still under lock and key. And 3 weeks ago, I went back to Cambridge and retraced my steps to get into those books, because you can actually touch the books and open them up with some supervision. But I retraced my steps, which I did as an undergrad, to see if you could still do it. And you can still do it.
Are you working on some different clock than I am? How do you have time to do your life? You know, this is your next book. We all get the same 24 hours. And then you explain how you pack what you pack into yours. You're a great dad. You're a very busy medical mind. You keep writing these books, and now you're going off to Cambridge. What in God's name are you up to?
My philosophy has always been the same, which is you never know how long you have. So I try to fill it up as much. And then you know what? When I get tired, I rest. Like, I let my body talk to me. I don't really pay attention to clocks.
You ever taken a nap?
I love power naps, though.
Like
I love
4 minutes?
Like 20 minutes. If you give me 20 minutes, I'm brand new all over again.
All right. The Ancient Nine is the book, and none other than Harlan Coben slugs it on the cover, so you know that it's got to be good. It's out and available everywhere. Get two or three copies. You know you're going to be careless. You'll probably lose the first one. Download a backup, and get the hardcover. A book like this, you got to hold it in your hands, yeah, man.
Or the audio. The guy who voices the audio, his voice sounds like Morgan Freeman. You know,
Orion? You got Orion to read the book?
No. But we got a Facebook page called The Ancient Nine, so like it and follow us. We're going to give $1,000 to a mystery we're going to post on the page. So if you read the book, we're going to post, can you solve this? So The Ancient Nine.
All right, we come back. I want you to talk about what it takes to come back from 4 back surgeries to be Tiger Woods.
Wow.
How about that, right? And you thought you were in good shape. The Ancient Nine's the book.
You don't know by now, I'm talking about Chi-Town.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Most valuable person on the planet for Monday, September 24th. I mean, I'd go with Dr. Ian Smith, but the selection committee has been up all night. And they've chosen Kanye West and his son, Saint West. Even though the Bears and Tiger and Team Europe and Northwestern and everybody was getting it done this weekend, Kanye West fired a 56-foot ceremonial first pitch before the Sox-Cubs game yesterday, and he got it done.
He did.
And he was wearing, like, NASA sweatpants. like a weird outfit.
Literally, yeah. The logo on his left side.
Space pants. Space pants. Who doesn't want space pants?
Like moon boots, yeah, or right. Thing.
Okay. Yeah. And afterwards, St. West walked upstairs and he bought the stadium.
Yeah.
Just with his allowance.
You got to say, I mean, he's been serious about coming back to Chicago and he keeps making these appearances. If you're going to throw out a first pitch, I guess Cubs Sox would be the way to go.
I suppose so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, and he did really well last night on the rerun of Family Feud.
All right, good.
Yeah.
Right.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, he's got a big week.
You're going
my
back.
My vote is Tiger Woods.
You know what's funny is you're going back to Cambridge. I'm sitting around last night watching a rerun of Celebrity Family Feud. What the hell's wrong with me? Unbelievable. Dr. Ian K. Smith is here. All right, listen, I know orthopedics is not your game, but you know the human body.
And you know
it
much golf.
Better than we do. And you know golf because you're a golf nut. The torque that it takes to hit a golf ball on the professional level and four back surgeries, those two things don't go together.
Well, first of all, I actually started off in orthopedics, actually.
Right,
so this is right down my alley. He didn't just have back surgery. He had spinal fusion, which means an automatic reduction in your range of motion in your lower limbs. And what's unbelievable is that it's extremely painful. It's very hard to rehab. And even when you rehab, you can never fully get, cause, you know, people don't know golf. Golf is all about torque as far as getting club head speed. It's how far you can get back and unload. And the fact that he can still do that and still hit the ball, by the way, 340 yards. But, you know, golf is more than just hitting it long. You know that. So it's also, you know, the short game.
He putted this out of his mind.
Out of his mind. But what people don't realize is the repeated stress that golfers have. We don't think about this, by the way. But think about it. If you just stood up in the middle of a room and took your back and swung as hard as you could.
Yep.
Let's say how many times you do it in the game. Maybe 18 times. Let's say 5. You know. You're talking 80 times or 90 times that you're going to be swinging like that. You'd hurt yourself just. It's unbelievable.
It, right.
Pretty crazy.
You know what kills me is that the very few people said he could ever win again. I was one, and I'm on Instagram as record saying that Tiger will win again for one reason only, because champions do not quit, they just adjust.
Yeah. He wasn't going to go out that way.
My 16 in softball. That's my philosophy.
A lot of people this morning are comparing the two.
Because Ian Justin had a 4-year break from 16 in softball.
And yet he's back out there again.
And he's in the playoffs.
Undefeated into the semis tonight. So not a big deal about it.
Listen, we talk about it more, but every time I bring it up, I get choked up just thinking about it.
It's amazing. You talked about how many times that the torque of a bat. I mean, just I can feel that. I feel that with the
Justin had a bad quad, so he
had a bad quad.
He had a quad, right?
Yeah. Dave, you understand.
I rolled it out.
I do understand it. And you asked earlier about comebacks. Mm-hmm. And you
do you have it?
Well, here are my two candidates.
Dr. Smith, the question was, is there a sports equivalent to what Tiger pulled off this weekend, being the best in the game, being not able to play the game maybe ever again, and returning to be, at least for the weekend, the best in the game? What do we got?
I got two. Mario Lemieux. With Pittsburgh, came back from cancer.
What's Pittsburgh? Yeah. Why is everybody in Pittsburgh?
And also came back from a serious injury after that.
Yeah.
And Peyton Manning. Oh, right. People forget, he missed an entire season. Yeah, he had neck surgery.
He won a Super Bowl. Right?
And came back and a couple of years later won a Super Bowl in Denver.
That's very impressive, and I still think Tiger's more impressive.
That's probably the one.
I still think Sidney Crosby is on the comeback list there.
Right. Even though you don't like him. Because Peyton Manning fits the same bill.
But I agree that he should be on the list.
Peyton Manning, they said he may never play again, or he'll have that same range of motion.
He didn't have feeling in his hands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he could.
No, I agree. It's close. I got to go with Tiger only because of the height that he was. Like, Peyton Manning had this other, you know, he had other players that were, you know, Brady was still playing, all the other guys.
One of the greats, as opposed to one of two, either he or Jack.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. So, Tiger was, you know, and I didn't realize that Tiger's, this 80 puts him behind Sam's. I didn't know he was ahead of Jack in the.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I know he's not ahead of Sam Snead. Will he get it?
Oh, he'll pass Sam Snead. He's not going to get 18 majors, but he'll pass Sam Snead.
You think so?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
And which is more important? Let me ask you as a golfer.
Oh, majors.
Majors.
Let's catalog this Super Joe for when Steve is wrong, because he oftentimes is wrong. And he says Tiger didn't. He also said President Trump wouldn't be our president. So let's just.
Okay, a little one. A little one got away. Dr. Ian K. Smith. The Ancient Nine. All right, you'll sign this for me before you leave.
Yeah.
The Ancient you'll Nine. Like go out and get it and read it and enjoy it and know that in the movie. Dave will be playing Dr. Ian K. Smith.
Ooh, yes. I like that.
I can't wait.
I like that. You can play Stanford. There's a character named Stanford L. Jacobs.
Stanford.
Oh, yeah. He's a very aristocratic.
Please slap an ascot on you. Your name would be Stanford in a second.
Yes. Doc, yes, bring the car around, please. Jeeves.
Headlines next, 720 WGN.
Should Deborah Ramirez, the new Kavanaugh accuser, be allowed to testify?
If she would like to, she can certainly contact the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. They have a process in place. Obviously, they've made tremendous unprecedented accommodations for Ms. Ford to testify on Thursday. Judge Kavanaugh has been willing to testify publicly to what he has said privately under oath from day one.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
You got to wonder what they're holding on to at this point and if the Republicans should just move on. Ryan Nobles joins us now, and Ryan Nobles from CNN. And Ryan, just for background purposes, Deborah Ramirez, 53, attended Yale with Kavanaugh, which means when he was at Yale, he was a legal adult. And in the New York, in the New Yorker piece, Ronan Farrow and Jane Mayer, Jane Mayer. This woman said, "Look, I was drunk. I have some gaps in my memory, but there are several things I know for sure." And she said that when she and Kavanaugh were both freshmen at Yale, she was invited by a friend on the women's soccer team to a dorm room party, and that a small group of students played a drinking game. We were sitting in a circle. People would pick a drink, and they became quickly inebriated, and as did I. At one point, she said, a male student pointed a gagged plastic penis in her direction. And later, she said she's on the floor foggy as two male students stood above her, and a third dropped his pants and thrust toward her face. She shoved him away, touching him in that area. I'm trying to clean this up as much as possible. Down the hall, somebody yelled and laughed and yelled out, "Brett Kavanaugh just put his penis in Debbie's face." Look, if none of this is true, if none of the first accusations are true, if none of this is true, let it come out in the hearing, and there's no reason there shouldn't be further investigations here, because there is no way, Ryan Nobles, this guy can be seated on the Supreme Court and not be a bigger distraction than he is in addition.
Well, you know, Steve, it's interesting. This past week, I was in Florida running down the candidates running for Senate and governor. And one of the things I tried to pin all of them on was, and it's incredible how you can't really get a straight answer on this.
Right.
Let's just say, let's just give me this. Let's live in a world where we know all the facts, and let's say the facts tell us that this actually happened. And if that actually happened, and this was before the latest round of allegations came out, is that enough to say Brett Kavanaugh shouldn't be a member of the Supreme Court? And it's incredible how, and I talked to Rick Scott, who's the governor of Florida, running for Senate, obviously a Republican, and Bill Nelson, who's the Democrat, a sitting incumbent up in a tough district, and neither of them could answer that question with a simple yes or no. And what that tells me is that this is really just getting hung up in politics, and there aren't a ton of people who have a real vested interest in finding the actual truth here, because it seems pretty plain to me that if this is true, the guy shouldn't be on the Supreme Court. And if he's not, let's figure that out. And I just don't get the sense in Washington that either side is in, has the best interest of finding the actual facts out here. They seem to be more interested in what the outcome will do for their political fortunes, which is unfortunate.
Ryan, the issue of sexual assault or even the misconduct that's being alleged is one, but the second is the categorical denials under oath. And this is where there was a good column this week in the Chicago Tribune about this as well, but this idea that there seems to be, if it is proven that this did happen indeed, you will have under oath a justice nominee for the Supreme Court lying.
Right. That's exactly right. And that's why I do think there is some value in him standing before those members of Congress and being asked those questions directly and him being forced to answer truthfully, because we'll learn a lot about how truthful he is in this situation, because it's very difficult for someone of his stature who understands how important it is to tell the truth in a setting like that. And if he's able to come through and answer those questions in a way that most people feel are truthful, I think that goes a long way to his credibility. And the same can be said for Dr. Ford. If she's willing to put herself through the rigors of this situation, and the thing I always go back to when it comes to Dr. Ford's side of all of this is, where is the benefit for her personally to put herself through all of
any of the women that step up? It's incredibly negative.
So I think that, you know, there's where, because I've heard a lot of people say it's just going to be a spectacle, it's just going to be a television show, it's not going to get us any closer to the truth, and I don't think that's true. I think you put these people through this process, and you're going to come out of that with a much better feeling as to who's credible and who's not, and then it's really going to put Republicans in a tough position as to whether or not they want to die on the sword for this guy, or if they think they ought to just move on. Because the thing I think a lot of people seem to lose sight of is that even if Brett Kavanaugh's nomination doesn't make it, it's not as if a conservative's not going to be sitting on the Supreme Court by the end of the year. They could just move on to somebody more conservative.
Well, we were including the woman from here.
Well, Ryan, we just mentioned as well, you know, Justice Gorsuch is a great example that there's a lot of conspiracy theories out this about this being a left-wing template or game plan or trying to weaponize the Me Too movement. But we saw Justice that just in this last year get nominated without all of this. So there is something to be said that there isn't a template, that there are conservative judges that can be, sort of nominated to the Supreme Court.
I think that is such an important point, Justin. I saw that point last night on Twitter. I couldn't believe it hadn't occurred to me beforehand. It's 100% true. And think about this. Neil Gorsuch is actually probably more conservative than Brett Kavanaugh.
Yep.
So if there was this, you know, I wish I could remember who tweeted it because they deserve the credit. They said, was George Soros just taking a temporary vacation during that time that he decided not to come after Neil Gorsuch? No, the reason is because there was nothing out there. There was no one willing to accuse him of anything. So this idea that every conservative man who puts himself out for some sort of important office is going to be put through the ringer and his credibility destroyed is just a fallacy. It's not true. The reason the allegations are there is because there's some credibility to them. Whether or not they're 100% true needs to be determined. We need to do this proper vetting because this is a lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court. He's not, you know, running for a county judge or dog catcher. This is much, much bigger than that.
Yeah, well, it depends on the dogs. That's an important job as well. Sandberg, last question.
Ryan, you mentioned the gentleman in Florida that couldn't say one way or the other what they think. And I have to wonder if it's not only just political ties, but everyone's own personal experiences, what they may or may have not done in their life, what they deem to be an assault or something. You know, it probably is a deeper thing than just what their political ties are.
No, I think that's a good point, Mary. I think there's a lot of men in Washington who have less than savory personal experiences, and this doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the interviews that I've conducted, but just in general, who like to party and have fun in high school, and what they thought was okay back then is much different than what we're coming to understand is okay now. And so anybody's life perspective is going to have an impact on how they feel about issues like these. That's unfortunate because I think we should come to a place where we should be able to tell right from wrong. And I think that's what's confusing people so much. And I think that's going to have a big impact on this going forward because you do have a certain set of people, and I've seen this argument made more than one time that, hey, come on, he was just a kid, let it go. And I think that raises your point, Steve, about the second accusation. This happened while he was in college. He was an adult. He was of the age of consent. He should know better.
They all better be telling the truth, the women included here, because whoever is lying in this case could be subject to criminal penalties. And Judge Kavanaugh, if he's proven to be the liar in this case, could lose his other job as well as face criminal charges. So there's no reason this can't be investigated further. It needs to be investigated further. We're certainly not in a position to hurry now as a second and possibly a third, as the rumors go online this morning, woman may be coming forward with all of this. So, Ryan, I know you'll be covering it, as will CNN. We'll see you later today.
Thanks, guys. Have a great week.
See you later. Ryan Nobles from CNN. Rich Lerner from the Golf Channel. He's watched more golf than I have. He'll come back and talk about the amazing accomplishment of Tiger Woods this weekend. And we'll do that in a second.
On the home of the Blackhawks, Northwestern Wildcats, and White Sox.
Tiger
baseball.
In a route. Write it down.
I know, am I right? Yeah, I didn't write it down last time.
Write it down.
Tiger in a route.
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay, got it.
The comeback is complete. Tiger Woods, your 2018 Tour champion.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
That was a bit of tape from Friday morning where I predicted Tiger in a route. Now, he was up by 5 yesterday. That would have been a rout. Mm-hmm. Two-shot win, not a rout, but yet still, I am the Kreskin of golf predictions.
I think you are still the Kreskin, because everything's relative.
Our friend Rich Lerner joins us. There's nobody better than Rich in talking about the game. Did you get a little choked up when this happened at all?
Honestly, I did, and it surprised me. I didn't expect it, but when the crowds busted through the security, which was odd, that never happens at a PGA Tour event, and it was like Michigan, Ohio State, and the last second field goal to win, and they're trying to rip down the goalposts. And when Tiger sort of bent down and put his cap over his head, it sort of all hit me.
Right.
And my God, what this guy has been through. You couldn't write a fictional Hollywood script that would be better than the arc of this story over 25 years.
Can you imagine a soundtrack as the music swells and the crowd pours in behind him? I mean, it's cool.
Yeah, it'll be one of those moments we replay for a long, long time. I would say he's obviously had greater performances, Masters by 12 in 1997, the U.S. Open by 15 in 2000, but I'm not sure he's had a greater moment than yesterday.
I'd agree with that.
So, Rich, is there any worse year to win the FedEx Cup Championship trophy, Justin Rose, than the year that Tiger Woods comes back and wins the...
Well, the $10 million will make him feel better.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, he's got $10 million to make him feel a little bit better about it. I think what was sort of disappointing about the weekend is that this generation, and I had thought these guys were not intimidated by Tiger. They were not diminished by Tiger in the way that so many players over the last 20 years had been. Thinking about Garcia and Els and people like that. What was disappointing is that these guys didn't mount a charge. I thought it was a really bad day for McIlroy. Playing alongside Tiger, he had a chance to do something to make his own statement. Would be sort of a Denzel Training Day statement. Yeah. I'm the man up in this piece. Go shoot 64. Those are the days that define a career alongside Tiger. And he shrunk. He looked a little bit meek out there. That was disappointing that they didn't make a move. And in that respect, it was like a lot of Tiger's 79 yes. previous wins, in that there actually wasn't a ton of drama, shot for shot drama. He just sort of sucked the life out of it. Nobody made a move on him. I'll be curious to see how these guys respond going forward. I would expect better.
Rich Lerner at the Golf Channel. Look, last point here to talk about the impact of an athlete on the business world. We know how good Tiger is for NBC Sports and the Golf Channel on a weekend like that. But in golf in general, including nobody's going to hold a pity party. Get out your tiny violins for those of us that love golf. But golf courses are closing around the country, and golf retailers are shutting down. And the reason is because Tiger hasn't been a factor in years, as opposed to when he was, and millennials wanted to play the game, and everything got fired up. What does this do?
I don't think that's the reason. I don't think Tiger has a ton to do with it. I mean,
give me your side.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just think it's cultural. People don't have time. I mean, it's too deep to get into. It's just so much different than my father's era in the 1970s. I mean, it's a time issue. It's an expense issue. It's being pulled away by 1,000 other entertainment options that are faster and quicker.
Well, that's true.
They also built too many. They built too many.
But why did they overbuild?
Right. Well, the economy was roaring. It is again now. But wealthy people aren't sinking their money into golf course developments. But look, I think from a business standpoint, the only thing I'm curious about at this point is whether corporate America will jump back on the Tiger Woods train. Will you see Tiger endorse Fortune 500 sort of blue chip companies the way he once did? And they ran for the hills. Because they couldn't be associated with somebody with, we'll say, his checkered recent history. Will they come back as his story has bounced back, a story of redemption? I'll be curious to see what happens there.
Rich Lerner, you're in Paris, headed for Paris, or that's not your beat?
No, actually, we are doing live from the Ryder Cup, except
we will be in the Orlando studio, and we will have some reporters and obviously our full live tournament team in Paris, wall-to-wall coverage. So we start live from tomorrow, and I would also push people tonight on Golf Channel. I believe it's 9 Eastern original films called Famous Five, and it's 5 European players who were all born within 10 months of each other.
Wow.
In 1957,
that's cool.
including Seve Ballesteros, who would go on to greatness and would go on to change the Ryder Cup, which for a long time was one-sided in the favor of the, in favor of the Americans.
Well, thanks for the plug.
So, it's a plug, and it'd be a great Ryder Cup. I think the U.S. is a slight favorite on foreign soil where they have not won a Ryder Cup since 1993. So 25 years since the U.S. has won in Europe.
At Rich Lerner GC on your social media everywhere. Thank you, Rich.
Thank you, guys.
You know, you mentioned Rory not making a charge there. When they were coming up 18 and that crowd started forming mm-hmm. behind them, Rory looked like a 16-year-old kid, and he kept looking at Tiger like, can you believe these people coming up? He'd never seen anything like it. And for a kid who, when he was young, had said, we don't really need Tiger, I'm not intimidated by Tiger, I think it was, I enjoyed seeing him have to see what that really looked like.
Well, that's my larger point about the impact as well. Colin Kaepernick changed the Nike stock by $6 billion. Mm-hmm. The impact Tiger on the game, I do believe, changed it in the way I described, and it's going to be interesting to see if there's any sort of revival from it. But again, he's got to keep winning.
Just watching as a casual fan, to watch any sort of golf, and Tiger Woods is in the tournament, the amount that the broadcasters are on him, the amount that the crowd is around him, it's obvious that he's the draw.
Coming up from the WGN Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, Steve Grzanich on WGN Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey.
We go live to New York City, where Dean Richards is standing in the street trying to find a bagel place. How are you?
No shortage of bagel places anywhere you go in New York City.
Why are you in New York?
I'm in New York because I'm going to be interviewing one Mr. Hugh Jackman.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you've heard of him. Young, promising actor.
I get confused with him a lot. Hugh! No, it's Steve.
I understand that. People have been asking me today, is that Steve you're interviewing or Hugh Jackman?
Right.
Now, why they would be asking me that, I have no idea.
Right. Absolutely. By the way, we're sponsored by Brand New Smile Dental Implant Center. You're listening to Moron Entertainment, and coming soon, the Moron Awards.
Well, everyone here in New York is anxiously awaiting because that's, you know, that's...
because they have nothing else to do.
There's nothing else for them to talk about. But let me tell you why I'm interviewing Hugh Jackman.
So yes, why are you interviewing Hugh Jackman?
Really interesting. His next movie that's coming out is called The Front Runner, and it is about former Senator Gary Hart. Oh, remember Gary Hart?
Sure. Gary Hart, Donna Rice.
Colorado, Donna Rice. He was the front runner for the presidential nomination back in 1988, and he suspended his campaign when allegations of an extramarital affair became public. This movie, The Front Runner, does a really good job in just, you know, presenting factually what happened with this whole thing, an alleged affair that to this day both Gary Hart and Donna Rice have denied, saying that they were only friends, even though there is a very famous picture of him on a boat.
Yeah, what was that boat
Miami.
Called? It was like
Monkey Business,
wasn't it? Monkey Business, that's exactly right.
Yes, exactly. The boat is called Monkey Business, and Gary Hart, ironically, is wearing a shirt that says Crew of the Monkey Business. You know, which doesn't help his argument at all that nothing was going
but
on.
Do you remember the background on this? They're on the campaign bus with the reporters, and somebody says, you know, there's a rumor that you're playing around, and he goes, ha, follow me. You'll see.
Yeah. Right.
And that led to the pictures in Florida.
Yeah, famously. There's an interesting story that's depicted in the movie about this. Those two things were not really related. Yes, he did say that to a reporter. I think it was for the Washington Post. But the Miami Herald got an anonymous tip on the telephone that Gary Hart had been seen with a woman at his Washington townhouse. Only had this anonymous tip, and they sent reporters did a stakeout in front of his house. They, you know, hid in the bushes, they hid in cars, and took pictures of Donna Rice, apparently Donna Rice, and another woman coming and going from this Washington townhouse. So it became ironic that he said, go ahead, follow me. You'll be very bored following me, when really this is what was going on. But this movie is so interesting in that, you know, remember now, this is 1988. This is pre-Jennifer Flowers. This is pre-Monica Lewinsky. This is go through the long, long list of, sexual scandals that now have taken place with politicians and other people in public life, where it's, I'm not going to say that it's, you know, not a big deal anymore, but certainly not enough to derail somebody's campaign, and especially with, you know, some of the things that are going on in the political climate today and sexual allegations that are, you know, going on today with some of the biggest names in politics. So, you know, this movie is about Gary Hart and what happened to him in 1987 and 1988. But this is also a movie about the media, journalism, people who live in public life, how much privacy they're entitled to, you know, what does the public need to know, what does the public not need to know, how far should journalism go in delving into things which, you know, may be of a personal nature. It's a really interesting movie on a lot of different levels.
And Hugh Jackman plays Donna Rice, because he's a really good actor.
He is. It's one hot blonde, I can tell you that much.
Last word, Samber.
He slaps that wig on. He's hot, hottie.
The National Enquirer covered her on June 2nd, 1987. Donna Rice, what really happened? Gary Hart asked me to marry him. Exclusive photos from the fun-filled weekend in the Bahamas. And it's that picture where he's wearing the Monkey Business Crew T-shirt.
And she's sitting on his lap.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Looks like a total work relationship. Yeah.
They look like friends.
Yeah, it doesn't look like anything's going on.
Tell Hugh Jackman,
all these years later, neither one has ever acknowledged that there was anything more to that to this day. They remain alleged allegations to one on. But,
and that's why Donna Rice has never been on the Supreme Court. See how it all ties together? All right, buddy. Have a safe trip back. Tell Hugh we said hi.
Will do.
That's Dean Richards live from New York. The cast of Hamilton is trying to get you to register to vote. Make sure you're registered to vote. And a couple have gotten up early to join us in a moment on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Just you wait. Alexander Hamilton.
I think this is going to catch on. I know you guys doubt me when I say that, but, you know, I'm all about the predictions. I think Hamilton's going to be hot at some point.
You said Tiger Woods was going to win in a rout.
Have you ever seen a theater production that you more want to go back and see again and again and again? Well, you've seen it twice.
I've seen it twice, yeah. And I would go back again and again.
Not to do with anything of that, other than that, Tomar's a good guy. David Orr and the Cook County Clerk's Office getting together with the cast of Hamilton to help register voters. Well, we do a pretty good job of that in Illinois. There's always some that slip through the cracks, and today is National Voter Registration Day. So the cast of Hamilton is going to do something special, and Tomar joins us now. Tomar, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, man. Thanks for getting up. This is Tomar Wilson, by the way. Tell everybody what you play in Hamilton.
I'm actually a standby, so sometimes I play Aaron Burr, sometimes I play George Washington, and sometimes I play the Marquis de Lafayette and Thomas Jefferson.
Oh. He's never played Orrin Hatch.
I know every word in the show.
That's amazing.
That's crazy. So from noon to one today, you guys are going to be where?
Actually, from noon to two tomorrow. Tuesday,
oh, it's tomorrow. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, we'll be right outside the CIBC downtown, 18 West Monroe, registering voters. So stop by.
And your pal Miguel Cervantes joins us now as well. I assume this is something when they come to you and say, would you guys be willing to help? You jumped in, Miguel?
Absolutely. I
especially if, you know, the I don't remember doing it last year too. It's something that. Good morning, everybody.
Hi, how are you?
Good morning.
It was something last year where, you know, it felt like an important part. You know, an important cause to be part of. You know, it's something that as all of a sudden in Hamilton, people kind of listen to us and look to us and are interested in what we have to say. This is something that, you know, was important last time in 2016, and, you know, our sort of ideas of what the outcome of that election may or may not have been different. You know, now in 2018, the idea is that it's very, very important to get as many people out to vote, and so we jump at the opportunity to help in any way we can.
So tomorrow between noon and 2 in front of the CIBC Theater, before I let you guys go, either one of you or both of you jump in on this, the great gap in voters is folks under 35. Older folks vote. People who have busy lives are more likely to vote, even though midterm numbers are pathetic and everybody needs to get out and vote this year more than ever, and that's not a cliche. What if either one of you want to say to people under the age of 35 who maybe don't understand how important this is?
That's one of the things about the show. Like, our audience is a lot of that group. A lot of young people come out and see, and they get engaged with the show, and they are interested in history. And we just kind of want to stress, like, they're a part of that. Like, they are part of what is going to make this nation work. You know, 2016, I think it was something like 60% of eligible citizens voted.
Mm-hmm.
That's ridiculous. It's kind of embarrassing. So, you know, we want to stress to those young people that they're a part of the system. The only way that it'll work is if they get out and get involved. So we want to help get registered.
Yeah, Miguel, 30% of the folks, all of us, vote in a midterm. That number is pathetically low, and that has to change.
Well, you know, there's something about, you know, the message of our story. You know, they were saying, you know, rise up. You got to. And these people were young at the time this was all happening.
Mm-hmm.
And these people were, they didn't realize the impact that they were probably going to have. And I think now a lot of young people, you know, and even old people like myself, sometimes are frustrated with the way things are going, and they want to do something. Well, this is one way we can do something that is an absolute guaranteed way to have your voice heard. You can go on Twitter and you can go on Instagram, all things, but this way your voice absolutely will be heard.
Thanks to both of you. And Miguel, you know, listen, he understands the stage. The siren went by and he ducked in the side. Nicely played by you. Thanks to both of you. And please thank the rest of the cast as well for doing this.
Of course. Thanks for having us, guys.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
All right. Appreciate you being on. And again, it's the CIBC Theater where Hamilton plays daily at 18 West Monroe. You can go by, you can meet the cast members tomorrow and find out how and get registered.
And it's important, of course, it's important to vote. Coming up after the news, we'll find out why people don't vote. A new poll from Max Temkin and Melissa Harris about a tale of two cities. Half of the city believes that their optimism and positivity, and the other half says not so much. So that's coming up after the news.
Interested to hear those numbers.
Super Joe's White Sox trivia question.
Every week, Super Joe joins us on the show, and really, he pays attention during this segment.
Answer Super Joe's White Sox trivia question correctly, and you can win White Sox tickets.
This, of course, is the subtle Super Joe intro to this section of the program. Super Joe, we have 4 tickets to see the White Sox play the Indians in the last home game of the season Wednesday night this week at 7:10. What is your question of the week?
So this is current division champions against future division champions.
Exactly.
Right. That's right. So Ken the Hawk Harrelson broadcasted the final game of his illustrious career yesterday.
Yeah.
Hawk played for 4 different teams over 9 major league seasons. How many home runs did he hit against his beloved White Sox?
Oh, that's a good question. So the other 3 teams, did they all play the White Sox, or you can't tell me?
He played for 4 teams, and 3 were in the American League.
Okay. 3 were in the American League. Okay.
And I'm not just leaving it out there. I'm going to give you a multiple choice here.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we got A, 9,
mm-hmm.
B, 10,
mm-hmm.
C, 11,
mm-hmm.
D12.
I would change one of those to, like, you know, it's, let's say 9's not the right answer. 9,000.
Yeah, right.
You know, just to help the callers.
Yeah. Okay, A, 9,000.
Okay.
B, 10. C, 11. D, 12.
Okay, there you go.
I'm disappointed because I like to guess Freddie Garcia is the answer to all his questions, but I can't. Freddie
Garcia.
Doesn't
really apply here.
No,
it doesn't apply. First correct answer, Joe, or 7th?
I'd say the first correct
First correct answer at 312-981-7200. That's the telephone number.
I thought I heard you at Cork and Carey saying the Sox were going to take 2 of 3.
I did. And after Friday, I felt pretty good about that.
We didn't pull. Yeah, right.
Let me ask a follow-up to Joe to clarify something.
Well, I don't know. Joe, are you taking follow-ups? I mean, don't ask me.
Depends.
All right,
okay, you're saying that he played, these are teams for whom he played, right, that Hawk played for. Not broadcast for.
Right.
Well, okay.
You know, how many?
They were all in the American League.
Of the four teams that he played with,
yes.
Three played in the American League where he hit home runs against the White Sox.
But he never played in the National League.
Well, then the three that he hit the home runs with. It's just, okay.
Okay.
All right. What kind of a pain are you to play Chutes and Ladders or Candyland with?
I'm just trying to clarify
Dave's
it.
I've got another question. Dave?
Trying to help Joe.
A fun killer in here.
981-7200. That's the number. All right, let's do this. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about this poll that Justin Goffman referenced. After 9 o'clock, Dan Hampton. Dan slept in this morning. That's how much the offensive sucking took out of him. Yeah, slept in a little later today. And later on, your buddy Steve Dolinsky.
Steve Dolinsky's got his new pizza book, Pizza City USA. He argues why Chicago is the number one pizza town in America.
And is it edible, the book itself? Like once you finish it?
It's a pepperoni book.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
That's all coming up at 8:45.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Super Joe,
on 720 WGN.
So much.
Super Joe, do we have a winner?
We sure do.
All right, what is the winner's name?
Marcus.
And we go to Marcus here. Marcus, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Steve.
Did you watch Hawk's final broadcast?
I did. And I'm happy that it's career is over.
Super Joe, repeat the question, please.
How many home runs did Hawk Harrelson hit in his career against the White Sox?
White Sox, how many?
He hit 11.
Is that correct, Super Joe?
Ding, 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 ding.
How would you possibly know that? Are you some sort of genius, Marcus?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, right, fine.
Who knows?
Works for me. You got 4 for the Indians and the White Sox final home game Wednesday night.
Thank you so much.
Hi, man. I appreciate you listening. I like Marcus. He's cool.
Did you hear Hawk's sign off, by the way?
I did not.
Would you like to hear a few seconds on it?
Sure, of course.
If you can a little bit, give us a couple of your thoughts.
I'm going to give you one, and that's it. I love you all. And I always will. That's just it. I'll go in my way for that. Thank you.
Wow, really emotional.
Yeah, he was very emotional. As soon as the last out was made, Matt Davidson was the last batter for the White Sox. And then the Sox came out of the dugout and tipped their caps to him. And then the Cubs did the same thing, led by Joe Madden. So it was very nice. And he was sobbing away out there.
Yeah. How about that? Tough guy like Hawk, you don't see that coming.
A couple years ago, GQ called him the worst broadcaster in baseball.
That's not true.
I know Cubs fans believe he's terrible. I think he's great. I just love the character aspect. And like Steve Stone told us on Friday, there's a little bit of Homer in him, and you don't see that anymore from broadcasters, this idea that they live and die on whether or not that team wins in that day. And so it's fun to watch Hawk Harrelson put it on the line like that. And you could even hear it in his sign-off where he's getting emotional. You know, I love it. I wish there were more of that in baseball.
Max Temkin is about to join us, Melissa Harris as well, and they have combined to do a polling company, which may well be the new cutting edge in polling.
True. It's a big poll, but the mayor's race coming out here, these guys have been putting together these polls to get to the issue of what are going to be the issues coming up here in the mayoral election. And what it shows is a tale of two cities.
And it sort of reinforces, Melissa joins us first here. Melissa used to write for The Trib. It sort of shows us maybe what we think we thought, but you got a lot of surprises in here as well. And good morning to you, Max, as well.
Good morning.
Justin, give us a couple things in the poll.
Well, the first, you kind of break it down. Some of the highlights, of course, you've got crime and quality of life, and you've got the mayor's race, and you've got some stuff on parks I want to get to as well. What I really, really want to know is you hear so much about how well Chicago is doing, but your poll shows a different side, this idea that there may be really optimistic people in the city, but also very pessimistic.
Yeah, so I'll give you an example. One of the questions we asked is whether the people we interviewed would recommend living, would recommend their neighborhood to their friend or family member.
Sure. Pride of ownership, pride of where you live.
Yeah, exactly. And on the north side, 71% said they strongly agreed that they would recommend their neighborhood to a friend or family member. Yet on the west side, that number was only 33%.
Wow.
That's a 38-point difference. That is substantial.
Did you expect that from the poll? Did you expect when you ask questions like that you would get disparity among neighborhoods?
Well, there's a saying in sort of civic data scene in Chicago that every map of Chicago is the same map. So, you know, what I take that to mean is Chicago's a very segregated city, and almost any time that you look at data about the city, you're going to see that reflected. So I was looking at, for example, the other day, a map of police brutality complaints, and it's the same map that you would see if you look at housing prices, if you look at school quality. And, you know, I can't say that I was personally surprised to see that reflected in people's sort of feelings about their neighborhood. But I think that Melissa and I were both surprised to see how big that difference was.
Chicago's a good place to find a job. North side, 56%. West side, 36%. And how about this? White folks under the age of 45, 48% say yeah. Non-white over the age of 45, 27% say yeah.
Max,
so
Melissa,
it's not just kids.
Yeah, and that's a big part of this poll. You know, as you said, it is a segregated city, and a lot of these disparities may fall along racial lines. But there's also an age component. You're seeing different answers from different generations.
That was what I was most surprised by, although our pollster advises that race was a more important factor than age, but that the two compounded to essentially identify the most disenfranchised people in Chicago as non-white people over the age of 45, no matter what neighborhood they lived in.
The other, you had a stat about crime as well. You asked a question about whether or not crime is up. And it was interesting to see that, you know, you had people on the north side who strongly agreed with that. But you had people on the south side and other places that didn't, because crime has been, I would assume from what you guys pull from this, crime hasn't changed. That it has been something that they've lived with in these neighborhoods for years.
Yeah, this is a curiosity that you can see in lots of different types of polls, but people's feelings about crime and how they feel about how safe it is to live somewhere often has really nothing to do with the actual reality of it. I mean, you know, to look at you know, like a larger trend for nationally right now, this is a very, very safe time to be alive. You know, most types of crime are at historic lows, but obviously if you look at the national kind of dialogue around Trump and immigration, you could get, you know, watching the news, you get the impression that it's a very dangerous time to be alive, and there's you know, a huge increase in crime.
The Temkin-Harris poll is what we're talking about, this seems like this would be a good template to run on if you're a mayoral candidate. What do we know about what you asked regarding the mayor's race?
Well, unfortunately, we polled right after Labor Day. We polled 500 people. It took us about 5 days to get 500 people to answer our questions. And so Tony Preckwinkle and Bill Daley had not yet thrown in their hat. But what we learned was that the electorate is largely undecided. And at that point, Gary McCarthy led the field at 9%.
Interesting. And you saw that it also went along ethnic lines as well, that African-Americans were supporting African-American candidates and so forth.
Correct.
All right, the last question I have for you, Max. It says in the poll that you're working on a project about parks, but this is fascinating to me that different areas of the city and different neighborhoods expect different things from their parks.
Yeah, so you know, this was a question about this huge Lincoln Yards development that's happening on that you know, that area by Goose Island, and it's a huge development project. And currently, as far as I know, the plans there's no sort of plan for a big public park. So we wanted to get people's feelings about that, and we asked how they would use the park. And something interesting that we found there is that where you live in the city and who you are changes many different factors, even how you would use a park. So when we asked people what they wanted, people who live on the north side were more inclined to say that they were interested in better access to the waterfront, a nice place to walk, a nature preserve. The people on the south and west side were predominantly interested in summer and after school programs for kids and an expansion of Park District summer camp. But one thing we did find was that across the city, there's huge demand for more public park infrastructure in Chicago.
We got to find a way to balance life, you know, and it starts with leadership. And do we have any? Where can people see these poll results most readily? Either one of you.
We've been covered in Cranes as well as on WGTW. So if you Google the Temkin-Harris poll, you'll see full results posted on our media partner, Cranes Chicago Business.
Are we posting them?
And you guys can post them as well.
Yeah. And by the way, this is nice. Temkin-Harris will come to your house. They'll come to your house, do a full presentation.
They will.
They'll put an easel up. They'll show you the whole thing.
You really want these guys.
Thank you both for the work you're doing. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, guys.
There you go. Temkin-Harris. I'm telling you, the new pollsters. You know, those Gallup kids had a nice run.
Yeah, right.
A couple of minutes before 9, coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Grzanich from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio.
And here comes the field goal from 43 yards. And the field goal is good. And the Bears, who trailed 14-0 in the first quarter, have taken their first lead of the game. Rosen under pressure, goes down, and the game is over. And the Cardinals drop to 0-3, first time since 2005. And the Bears survive. And I'd have to say that would be the description for this game.
An animal!
Dan Hampton anchors a young Bears defense.
Animal.
It's time for Dan Hampton.
Sponsored by ChevyDriveChicago.com. I have an important question about what I just heard, Dave. How old is Dick Stockton?
I think I read he's 75.
Still sounds full of life, full of pep. Life. Yesterday, the Bears offense did what Hamp thought they would do, and he was quite angry about it after the game. And the Bears defense looked like they were doing an impression of you guys in 85. Good morning.
And you know what? We welcome it. And unfortunately, now it looks like everybody expects it. And at some point, it just doesn't work out like that. By the way, when I was a little kid, we drove to California. And in Arizona, they have a petrified forest. Do you know that?
I do, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what Rosen lives. Anyway, back to the dead offense. We are in. I got to tell you, we're in the midst of a battle. A lot of our fans are saying, "Hey, guys, we won." And you know, we're happy about it, but my goodness, once again we had to squeak by, almost on the on the good intentions and favors of friends. I mean, the officials gave us three unnecessary roughness calls that gave us a chance on offense to continue drives, and both of those drives we were able to result in points. And on defense, you can't, I got to tell you, Eddie Jackson made a great play on an interception, but it was even outclassed by Sherrick McManus, interception.
The guy that doesn't even normally play defense. Here's the thing, and I want to get Dave and Justin in here as well. You can't pull a Baltimore Ravens early 2000s out of your hat. You can't pull a Bears 85 out of your hat. You got to have offense. At some point in a league that's predicated on the pass, you have to have offense. That's the core of your concern that I heard from you and the guys yesterday afternoon.
Absolutely. And the great Ed Obrenovich says this, you know, almost on a weekly basis. The game has been, you know, predicated on you going down the field. And that's what the fans want. That's what the league wants. Except we don't seem to be equipped to be able to do that right now with our quarterback. And when you can't do what is not only expected but necessary, then everything else becomes arduous and it becomes belaborious. And you know, at some point, you know, Jordan Howard, we love him, and he had a fine game. Statistically, it didn't look like it, but he was able to give us, you know, enough juice to keep the sticks moving for, you know, the three field goals that ultimately were the difference in the game. But yeah, this offense needs to get on a rhythm and be able to click, and we haven't done it yet. And, you know, unfortunately, it's all about the quarterback. The quarterback has not been able to get up to speed with the NFL style of blitzes and coverages, and he's not able to, you know, quickly read and facilitate the ball. And until he does, teams are going to be coming more and more emboldened. Now, I got to tell you, you know, we'll find out who Tampa Bay is tonight. Pittsburgh is winless. They're desperate. We'll see what happens tonight. But Tampa Bay, they've got Jason Pierre-Paul on defense. They've got their first-round pick who's going to start. Vita Vey, he's a monster. He's 365. I mean, we're not going to be able to nickel and dime. We're going to have to be able to make some big plays, and it's all about the quarterback getting it done.
Hey, Hamp, and I want to thank you guys for allowing me to sit in with you while you were watching the game yesterday.
Whoa, you buried the lead. We didn't know about this.
Oh, that's awesome. I want to shout that.
It's always an experience.
What kind of damage have they done to the conference room?
No damage to the conference room at all, just to me. But I survived.
You know, it's funny, Hamp. He came in, he had a twitch this morning, but we didn't know what it was. I think I do now.
Well, we bring a lot of Gorilla Glue and Gorilla Tape to put things back together before we leave. And we had to tape up Mr. Cat twice.
Yeah, they did. But is that, okay, here's the thing, and this is what Bears fans are wondering now. They're 2-1. They're in first place. Minnesota and Green Bay looked bad yesterday in the games they lost. Is this a playoff team? Offensive troubles notwithstanding.
Well, as we look at it right now, first place is first place. You can cut it any way you want. But, you don't have to make excuses. But you do have to go out and make corrections. And you have to get better. And let's be realistic. You know, we saw Matt Stafford last night in Detroit carve up the New England Patriots. We know what Aaron Rodgers is capable of. We know that Kirk Cousins is signed for $1 billion because they feel like he was the missing. Right now, is Trubisky even anywhere close to those guys? Well, you know, the answer is no. And as much as we all want him to, and we want him to be great, and we want him to progress, in this offense, especially the last 2 weeks, it's almost sad. It's almost like the head coach Matt Nagy knows that he's not capable of not only recognizing coverages and blitzes, but he's protecting him, and now he's hunkered down, and we're doing a bunch of very simplistic things on offense where, you know, it's just a matter of time till defenses figure it out. You know, that's the, you know, there's two types of time in the world. It's normal elapsed time, and then it's how quick a defense can figure out what you can't do, and then they capitalize on it. So it's inherent upon Mitchell Trubisky. If he grows, we go. And right now we're in first place until we lose. So, you know, it's up to this team to kind of say, hey, nobody expected it, but we're in the driver's seat. We're buckling up. We're not getting out.
Hamp, one of the positives of this game, of course, is the Bears' defense. Not unlike what they did to Russell Wilson on Monday Night Football, the pressure that this defensive line and the linebackers are getting on the quarterback position is making turnovers and giving the Bears just this energy that we have not seen in Chicago for a long time. What makes this team and this side of the ball so impressive?
Well, again, you got to have horses. And, you know, I mentioned, you know, Jason Pierre-Paul and Vita Faye. And, you know, those are high draft picks. Those are, you know, good players that now have elevated their game. We know about Khalil Mack. For 3 weeks I told you, this is the best thing the Bears have done in 20 years. Maybe it's now 100. Who knows? I mean, he's made a lot of plays already in just 3 games. But Akeem Hicks is very good. And you know, Danny Trevathan is a terrific player. Lenny Floyd will get better now that he's got his hand out of the cat. We've got some guys that have a chance to be special. And the one thing is, when you know, one of your buddies, you know, gets the Corvette and the cheerleader, everybody's like, "Wait, what about me? What about me?" Well, they want to, you know, to be the star. They want to be the guy. And so when Khalil Mack gets paid $1 billion and everybody's talking about how great he is, well, they're all going to try to step up. And, you know, a couple of things happened yesterday. It was terrific. The fifth-round pick, Nichols. He makes maybe the biggest play of the game on third down and two. He gets a 3-yard loss. And that forces him into a must-pass situation with a rookie quarterback. So, I mean, all these contributions, we used to call it a fight at the bat rack. When there's a lame pitcher, everybody wants to go out there and knock him out of the park. Well, when you get a defense rolling like this, everybody wants to be on the field and go after the quarterback and get a sack. And that's a great situation for us to be in.
Before we let you go, obviously we'll talk about the weekend coming up when we talk to you on Friday. It's been well documented how the defense and the offense had separate countries in the 85 Bears. Can this drive a wedge between a team when the defense is doing all the heavy lifting and is even protected, or I should say projected to score and needs to score? And at what point does the defense say to the offense, you know, carry your own weight?
I don't think so. I think everybody knows what's brewing. You know, the offensive line has come together. They're not the greatest in the league, but, man, they've done a pretty decent job. The running backs, we know that Jordan Howard is the goods. Tariq Cohen makes big plays. The receivers have come a long way. By the way, we're going to miss Anthony Miller. He's got a dislocated shoulder. That kid was special. And, you know, somebody's going to have to step up. But it's all about the quarterback. Everybody knows that. And it's all, you know, and the head coach can't come out and say, look, for whatever reason, he's having a hard time figuring out when the safety and corner rolls up and they're standing out there, you know, snorting at the snap of the ball, they're going to come. He didn't realize it. He didn't recognize it. He did not get the ball out and took a 17-yard sack. So I don't think it'll be anything that the team starts to, you know, have, you know, internal rumblings with. But, again, for Trubisky to not, you know, and I don't want to say mature, but there's a point where you just, you know, you quit talking and saying, oh, yeah, we got their back, we got their back. Go out there and score touchdowns.
Right.
That's how you do it. That, and then you don't have to say we got your back, because then it'll be 40-3 and everybody's, you know, happily going back to whatever they want to do. But at some point, can this quarterback be the Achilles heel if he doesn't progress? Yes, but who's to say he can't? You know, there's a reason Pace moved up and gave the world away. Let's hope we start seeing why.
Could you have played under the rules that protect quarterbacks today?
It'd be tough, wouldn't it? You know, I mean, Dick and Mongo and Otis and Wilbur, I mean, we'd be thrown out of the game by halftime. And I understand why they're doing it. We all got it. It's just like, you know, unleaded gas and catalytic converters. I'm not crazy about them either, but it's, you got it. I mean, that's the way life is now. So you have to make adjustments, and you got to play by the rules. You know, on defense, we have to, you know, adjust to the rules and play within that. Now we need to do it on offense. We need to start making some accurate throws down the field to back people off.
First place. How about it? First place.
Isn't that something?
It's been a while.
Crazy.
Winner, chicken dinner. All you got to do in this league is keep winning, and a lot of good things happen. It's great.
Like one chicken dinner is going to be enough for you three. Thank you, buddy. I appreciate it.
All right. Talk to you Friday. Go Bears.
Sponsored by ChevyDriveChicago.com.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Every time I move, I lose when I look, I'm in. And every time I turn around.
Jeffrey Osborne, and for $10 million, tell me the name of the group. It's a shame. I was actually going to pay off.
I know.
LTD.
Okay, yeah.
One of the great songs of all time. Crank this up. I'm going to dance a little bit. Watch this, Justin. Watch how I shake it.
Whoa.
People are waving from the Sheraton Hotel over here. They're so impressed. Well, they're telling me to close the drapes. I guess that's what they're doing.
That's a dance move. Close the drapes.
Yeah, you can pull that off. It's 9:28. Got to be thinking about the people of North Carolina and South Carolina. Water flowing downhill. There's still 400 roads in North Carolina that are closed, and the majority of the massive flooding still expected to take place this week is on the North Carolina-South Carolina border. So that story's not over. Bill Cosby starts day one of a two-day hearing, scheduled to be 2 days, in regards to sentencing. Anybody want to make a prediction on whether or not he goes to jail?
I think he goes to jail.
So do I.
But
I think he's got to
go to
jail.
Well, he gets sentenced, but then there'll be an appeal, right?
Oh, he'll go to jail during the appeal.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, unless they can make some, you know, sympathetic medical
plea. Are they just arguing old age? Is that the argument for him not going to jail?
I think so. I think that's it. Yeah. Dave, is he going to jail?
I think he's going to jail.
I think he's going to jail. I don't think he's going to get 30 years. I mean, obviously, that'd be a death sentence. It could be at 3 years, and I think that's what it's going to be. It's one of those 2 or 3 year sentences.
Didn't something come out during this that he had some health problems?
Yeah,
that popped up during the trial.
He can't see. He's like,
yeah, but Mary, have you seen the part where when he gets in the car, he gets in on his own?
Oh yeah, no problems.
He like spins for the guy that's escorting him to the car, and he just slides in on his own.
Yeah,
yeah.
Dancing with the Stars debuts tonight, the new season, and Mary, your homework is you have to watch it.
Well, I, you know what? I will watch it, but man, I'm kind of getting tired of watching it. I hate to say that.
What season
cast.
Is this?
Weak cast. 400.
It is a weak cast. B-listers. Don't know any of these people except Mary Lou Retton.
Grocery store bagger. Don't you know him?
Oh, grocery. Yeah, I do like him.
Mary, did they keep the same dancers? Like the,
no.
The pros? No.
Well, there's different ones. They you know.
They don't change it up much, do they?
Well, like, Max is gone. Max doesn't do it anymore. Julian Huff doesn't do it anymore. Derek Huff, you know, they're too big. They're
who's
too
the little blonde that always seems to get the wrong dancer who's really good? Well, they're all really good dancers, what am I talking about.
A woman?
Yeah. Wesley Snipes? What's your name? It's like W name.
Whitney?
Whitney, that's it.
A little Whitney, yeah.
Yeah, she always seems to get the wrong guy.
She's got this guy, Milo Manheim? Who the heck is he? He's a Disney guy. He's only 17. She always gets the youngsters because she looks like she's 12.
Well, she's only like 23, 24.
Yeah,
right?
She yeah. is. But she's really good. So.
And the women, it was the great quote from Ginger Rogers, right? Fred Astaire was great. Yeah, well, Ginger Rogers did the same move backwards in heels.
Yes.
Yeah, right?
Well,
yeah.
Women do dance back because, you know, I take ballroom dance. And the right. thing that I don't like about it, my Fitbit does not work because Fitbit doesn't count backwards.
Oh. Is that true?
It is true. So
you weird.
I have a dance class Fitbit. And I'm exhausted and I go home and I'm like, oh.
I thought it was like satellite positional, satellite changing combined with arm movement.
Well, mine is bad
movements.
Then. It just doesn't, no.
Yours doesn't go in reverse.
It doesn't go in reverse. Isn't that weird?
It is very weird.
But I thought you could just sit there, shake your hand.
Oh, that works. If I'm sitting here right now, like, look what I'm doing. I'm just running in place.
Yeah.
It'll register.
I'm wearing a Fitbit. You mean if I shake my hand, I can hit my steps number?
Well, try dancing backwards today and see what happens.
All right.
Okay.
Are you seeing Abigail? Because you guys do dance.
I am seeing Abigail.
So dance with Abigail.
Yeah, we'll have a dance party today.
But go backwards and see if it counts.
You're not kidding. I just shook my hand. I had 7 steps.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not right.
There you go.
It's ridiculous.
That's called a hack. You guys are hacking technology.
That's exactly right. And last word is the Kavanaugh story gets even uglier as a second accuser has come forward. The hearing is still scheduled for Thursday. The Democrats don't get off scot-free on this. Aside from the politics, Minnesota Congressman named Keith Ellison, who is a co-head of the DNC, at least in theory. Keith Ellison has been accused by his ex of being physically abusive again and again and again. And to prove it, now she sent medical records forward of treatments that she got after one of his beat-ups.
And this allegation came out, the allegations came out when he was running for primary for, I think, attorney general in the state of Minnesota. And he He didn't deny it. He said, no, this is smear, whole bit. So it felt like he felt like it was put to rest. So now he's doing no comments on his stuff.
Right.
And everyone is saying that he needs to.
Going
to
need a little more than
more
that.
More than that, but he's referring back to months before the primary.
Politicians lie. Politicians can get away with lying. People that want to be on the Supreme Court cannot, as we talked about off the air. If you're a judge, truth is your business. So Brett Kavanaugh better be telling the truth.
Yeah.
9:33. Your old pal Steve Dolinsky.
Yeah. Pizza City, USA. New book is out. Chicago number one.
He's got some sort of shoulder harness with food in it. I don't know what's happening there.
Yeah.
He'll be in here in just a second. First at 9:33. We need a quick break. And then the headlines at 720 WGN.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
All right, so Steve, let's go over this again here quickly, because this is soon going to become the biggest story of the day, as it's starting to break now everywhere. Deputy AG Rod Rosenstein, expected to be fired, should be announcing his resignation this morning. There's a guy named Noel Francisco who would then become the new Rod Rosenstein, and he would be the guy that would get Mueller's report once Mueller is done with it and then decide what to do with it. Is this the Trump White? I mean, speculation wise, is this the Trump White House end run? That it was Christmas morning when Rosenstein was implicated in wearing a wire in that New York Times story the other day. Yeah. So therefore, they can start the dominoes falling.
Hard to say. You know, the other thing too is, I mean, it's not just the report that would go to Noel Francisco. It would be the investigation, overseeing the investigation from this point going forward. Mm-hmm. So whoever takes over for Rosenstein could theoretically slow the investigation, could, you know, put stuff on back burners, or you know, let it continue as it is.
But why would Rosenstein resign this morning as opposed to letting Trump fire him?
That's a very good question. That we're going to have to be waiting, you know, for some reporting on that. Maybe he didn't want to be fired. Maybe he'd rather quit instead. Again, the report is very vague. It's very short, just a couple of lines in Axios. So we're going to have to do some reporting and watch the reporting out on this.
We don't know that it's definitely going to happen. That's important to say.
There'll be a book in 6 months.
Right. And it's interesting that the way this report describes it is a verbal resignation to White House Chief of Staff John Kelly, and not a written resignation, not a letter that's been handed in. So did he, you know, did he do it in anger? Did he do it off the cuff and it wasn't formal? That has to be, I guess, waited.
Yeah, it could have been one of those, well, I guess I'll just leave then.
Right, right,
right.
All I can tell Rod Rosenstein, who I know listens every morning, is you get severance if you get fired. That's all I'm saying, you know? And severance is a beautiful word. Steve, thank you.
Yep.
There you go, Steve Grzanich in the newsroom. And again, Trump firing Rosenstein is, quote, being looked at. Those are words from him this morning when asked about it at the UN for the General Assembly. Let's talk pizza.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
Yeah, it'd be great is if a guy who is known as one of the great food guys in Chicago would write a book about pizza. Wouldn't that be good?
That would be good.
It'd be great.
Pizza City, USA, 101 Reasons Why Chicago is America's Greatest Pizza Town. Out now, Steve Dolinsky, the award-winning, award-winning journalist.
Wait. I thought you had the
I'm
awards.
I'm a two-time James Beard Award winner. I don't like to bring it up that often.
Okay, how many does he have?
He has 13?
Yeah, 13.
13.
I don't have any.
But you're close, Justin. You're close. You're on your way.
That's right.
All right, so why the pizza book?
Because I read another listicle online of the 7 hottest pizza places in Chicago that was bunk, and I thought no one has really ever gotten to the bottom of this. I couldn't believe no one had ever done a deep dive on pizza in Chicago. There are always stories about these are the greatest pizzas, but no one actually went to all the pizza places.
How many did you go to?
185.
And how many make the book?
101.
101.
So there are 84 that did not make it.
Did you have a specific criteria for including or not including?
Yeah, two things I was really looking for. One of the terms I came up with in the book is called OBR.
Which is?
Optimal bite ratio. Because when you bite into a pizza, you don't want to have a mouthful of dough, like some stuffed places. You don't want to have a mouthful of cheese.
You want balance.
You want balance. Just like in any good sandwich or taco, you want balance in a pizza slice.
OBR.
So OBR is important. Yeah. And then also just looking at the dough, because anybody can order great cheese from Wisconsin. They can get great bulk sausage from Greco. But you can't just automatically get great dough, and it requires moisture and flour mixtures
and skill,
and fermentation and proofing time, and so there's a little more skill in making great dough.
And there's a national story out of this. Steve Dolinsky has debunked finally debunked that Chicago is a deep dish town. Everyone loves to talk about Chicago and its deep dish pizza, but for Chicagoans, there's a different kind of pizza they're interested in.
Well, that's what, yeah, again, in the book I say deep dish is to Chicago what Times Square is to New York. You know, it is that box you check when family comes to visit from out of town. It's not something we get on a Thursday, Friday, Saturday night. We all know that. We get tavern style, thin crust, square cut, thin sauce, and cheese all the way to the edge, Triano's, Barocco's, Palermo's, Pat's, you know, on and on and on. A quarter of this book is tavern style pie because that's what we eat in Chicago. So I say Chicago style means thin.
Mm-hmm.
Deep dish was certainly created here in 1943. It is a Chicago style, just like stuffed was created here in 1974 at Giordano's and Nancy's.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the day-to-day pizza we have as Chicagoans is tavern style.
Do you have a favorite?
Favorite tavern style? Yeah, I've got top fives in the book in different chapters. I've got top five city, top five suburbs. My top five, because there are a lot of them.
He's eating so much pizza.
In the suburbs.
How are you not 900 pounds?
A lot of core power yoga. I did a class yesterday, yoga sculpt class. You got to exercise. I did three a days for about 3 months at a time of just eating pizza. And so I would try to hoot core power once a day.
All that thought one second. Back to Steve in the newsroom.
More reporting on this story about Rod Rosen. Steve, CNN is reporting now that a source close to Rosenstein is disputing the Axios report that he offered his resignation, but he's on his way to the White House right now, and the source says that he expects to be fired by President Trump at that meeting at the White House.
We're going to pick this up with Steve in just a second. What's the book called again?
Pizza City USA.
Pizza, can you get it everywhere, or do I have to go to a pizza place?
Everywhere on Amazon, for sure.
Are any of the stuffed pizzas stuffed with your book?
They might be. This book could certainly fit inside of a stuffed
cool
pizza.
Cool promotional idea.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, get two copies. You're careless. You'll lose the first one, and your fingers will be greasy, and you might need a third.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Back with Steve Dolansky. All right, Justin.
Okay, so we had the top five in the suburb of city. What were the answers to that?
Let me get your mic. Sorry.
So city, I had Vito and Nick's, 84th and Pulaski, Pat's on the north side, Side Street Saloon. Those are my top three tavern-style city. Suburbs, I had Villanova and Stickney, which is a dark horse. I love that place. Chester's Orsi's in Summit and Joe's up in Wheeling. All excellent tavern style.
Now you will start the text line going here because everyone believes that their pizza place is the best pizza place. How do you do that as you're doing a book about the best pizza places in Chicago? How do you deal with this? Is so personal,
right? So I talked about in the book Pig Syndrome, pizza I grew up eating syndrome. So like if you're from Homewood and Flossmoor, you think Aurelio's in the old oven is the greatest pizza in the world, and I get it because that was the thing that you connected to birthday parties and Little League games and all those great events, and so I said, listen, I'm from Minnesota. I've lived here for 25 years. I came in with no bias. I don't have any of those childhood memories that are going to color my opinion. But I've been a professional food writer for 23 years here. And so I went in everything with fresh eyes. I went to all the sacred cows. Nobody got a pass. Always anonymous. Always calling ahead, asking, what are you guys known for? What's your specialty? I would order that pie, half pepperoni, half sausage, unless it was a...
Pick it up and eat it at home?
No, eat it right there. Eat it right there. Eat it in my car if it's a takeout place.
Yeah, but once you come in, everybody knows who you are.
No, absolutely not. No, OB's on Archer. They don't know who I was.
You wearing a disguise?
No disguise.
You going Mrs. Doubtfire?
You got that dick and mustache? That
no, because you call up and you pick up the pizza. What are they going to do at that point when they hand you the pizza? They're not going to change anything.
What's your name? Steve Boland?
Steve Doubtfire. Yeah.
Jimbo. I don't know. I don't give him my name. I show up. I get the pizza. But if it was a Neapolitan joint, I would get a margarita, just the cheese and the sauce, just baseline. Because I wanted to compare apples to apples.
Well, what's your favorite pizza? Just you personally. Because it's such a personal thing.
I really love Coal Fire and I love Pizzeria Bibo.
But what do you like on it?
Artisan style. I just like Nduja, which is a spicy, spreadable Calabrian sausage. I like pepperoni, maybe some fresh ricotta. That's it. I don't need more than two ingredients.
I don't want to tell you how to do your business, but there's a little place called Domino's. I don't know if you've heard about it.
Very familiar with Domino's.
So do you think that there will be a time when we shed the deep dish?
Never. No, because it's our tourist attraction. Like, are we ever going to shed Navy Pier? Absolutely not. Everybody comes to Chicago, like, what is this thing you have with the high sides? I've never seen that before. Mm-hmm. They've got to do deep dish. They got to check that box. But what I want them to do is say, look, we've got 10 styles of pizza in Chicago. We've got deep, yes. We've got stuffed, of course. We've got tavern, Sicilian, Neapolitan, Roman, you know, artisan, all these different styles that I think make us a great pizza city.
And it's one thing to just be an author, but Steve is now a tour guide. He does walking tours, pizza walking tours.
Pizza City USA tours.
So there are five or six different tours that you can take in the Chicago and the suburbs? Or just Chicago for now.
Yeah, we do a bus tour. We do walking tours. Every tour is four styles of pizza in 3 hours. That's kind of our goal for people. We want to show you more than just deep.
What do your monthly expenses at Channel 7 look like? 150 grand, 200 grand a month?
I spent my advance on the book, certainly on pizza.
There you go. Pizza City USA.
Pizza City USA. Get a couple of copies, you and your greasy fingers. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Appreciate you being here.
Yeah.
Coming up, Stories of Matter. Steve Bertrand's got a lot to talk about in the Northwestern Newsroom. Coming up on WGN Radio. Bill and Wendy are here. Favorite pizza?
Topping-wise?
No. Where?
Lito's in LaGrange.
Okay.
Countryside, rather.
Chicago Dough Company, Richardson Park.
Okay.
Really good.
Lou Malnati's.
Lou Malnati's, very good.
Saturday night, I had Lou's. I hadn't had pizza in like 6 months. What am I doing?
Why?
How did it feel?
What happens,
Steve?
It's
the new program I'm on. Now, write this down.
Yes.
You know how you lose weight in America?
How's this?
Write this down. You can wait for my infomercial.
Yeah.
Eat less.
Eat less.
Comma.
Comma.
Move more.
Move more.
That's it. That's the secret.
Never
right
heard
there.
Of that before.
Yeah.
Let's move more.
You know the keto diet?
Yes.
This isn't it. what are you guys doing today?
We're not trying to top your pizza.
Yes, we are.
But it's lobster day.
Lobster.
Oh, today's lobster day.
Lobster day in the studio.
Is this supposed to be lobster day? Is it a national holiday? I'm not aware of.
Yeah, kids aren't in school today. They're out lobster fishing.
It's National Lobster Day.
You going to be cooking lobster on the show?
Some people will do that for us.
Some boiling water and throw lobster in there?
So that we don't want to disappoint them, we will eat all of it. And listeners have a chance to win some lobster dinners.
You know, it's funny because there was a story that came out over the weekend about a more humane way to cook lobsters. And apparently what they're doing now is they're making them listen to tapes of Eric Ferguson's show, and they just doze off and drown.
They die before they get in the water.
Yeah, that's it.
On the mix.
See you tomorrow.